Hi, I'm Siobhan. Nice to meet you all. Thank you so much for having me. I am grateful to have been in recovery since August 28th of 2016. And if it weren't for this program, I would not be where I am today. So thanks so much for having me, Chris, and nice to see you all and meet you all. So I've got a really long and convoluted story, but I'll try to make it nice and quick for you. So forgive me if I get sidetracked. So I was born into a family of alcoholics and addicts, that goes back multiple generations. And so drugs and alcohol were really, a norm for my childhood. On the outside, it was pretty shiny. At least my alcoholic parent was able to kind of keep appearances up, and they were the ones able to take care of me for most of my life. And then my addict parent abandoned their responsibilities early in my life, so I didn't really know much about them or their addiction until later on. I had a pretty shiny childhood on paper. I had the privilege of going to a really great school. I had privilege of traveling a lot. My one of my parents' family is from overseas, so I saw a lot of stuff in my early childhood that I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to have. But what people didn't see was the toxic alcoholism and addiction that was in my family behind closed doors. And so that's something that I got really good at growing up, was showing the shiny on the outside and keeping all of the ugly behind closed doors. I'm sure that's relatable for a lot of us. So I actually was a late bloomer into my addiction. I was like, I don't like what that looks like. I don't like what that feels like when I'm on the back end of the negative repercussions of those people's actions. So I was like, I'm not really interested in alcohol or drugs. It's not really my jam. So I didn't really start drinking or doing drugs until I was about 17 or 18, which is still young, but not as young as some. And, but I took that first sip and I took that first hit and I realized, uh-oh, this is going to consume me. But I was completely fine with that consumption. I had a whole bunch of early childhood minimal traumas that at the time were very large to me. And I was like, I'd rather not feel those things. So I went pretty heavy in from jump. And in my early 20s, I had already established a career as an international tap dancer. I was traveling the world with the company that I was working in. And I had all these opportunities. I'd had all this time to refine this craft that I was really fond of. And I got to do it for my career, and it was super great. But I was hiding all of that stuff that I hadn't processed behind drugs and alcohol. I was internationally acting a fool at that moment in my life, in my early 20s. And what really sparked like the true downward decline was when my grandmother passed away when I was about 22 years old. And that was the first my grandfather. That was my first death I had experienced ever in my life. And little did I know it would be the first of many. When you're in a community like ours, they unfortunately come more often than you'd like them to. So after my grandfather's death, I became pretty numb and started drinking a bit more than normal. And then immediately after that, my grandmother died. And that's when I started really diving headfirst into my cocaine addiction. I also suffered with depression, anxiety, and anorexia and bulimia at that time. And cocaine really helped me maintain that, that energetic, slim figure that I was going for. And I was able to party all the time and not think about, my problems and my issues and my pain and my grief and my sorrows. And I just kept pushing them down further and further, and they kept rearing their ugly heads anywhere they could. And so naturally, as an addict, I figured more drugs would solve that, that problem. So when I turned 24, my best friend and my aunt died. Them being one person, my aunt. And I was the one to find her in her apartment, deceased. She was very young, and she died of kidney failure from alcoholism. And my parents were out of town. So I naturally slipped into a very traumatized state of mind and could not handle that at all. Shortly after that, I started getting into meth. I had reconnected with some neighborhood acquaintances that I had known since I was probably 18. And I bought drugs from them every once in a while. We were cool. We hung out. And that sent me in a very heavy downward spiral. I learned very quickly that those people did not have my best interest at heart. I thought, since I had known them for a while, that they weren't bad people or wouldn't harm me in any way. It turns out that they are actually sex traffickers, and they began drugging and sex trafficking me against my will. And that lasted for about 3.5 years, until I turned about 28 years old. I had tried everything to get away from them. It became threatening to my livelihood, my family. They took over 2 houses. They stole 2 cars from me. I lost all of the stuff that I had, except for my career. And no one on the outside of my addiction knew that I was going through any of these things. I would go to work all day, try to stay up as many days or hours as I could on meth. And when I crashed, they would sell me against my will, or drug me to make me fall asleep to do it that way. That went on for so long, and I was so spiraled out of my mind. I didn't know which way was up. And toward the end of, or what I was hoping would be the end, I reached out to my parent that was in addiction, who had abandoned their parenting to me, because I knew that they were into the same drug. And I reached out to them and was like, "Hey, I'm dealing with a lot of different, scenarios that I didn't ever imagine could happen or would happen, or didn't even know that this is how things could happen." Like, I was so confused. And I knew that they had experience in gangs and dealing with navigating these types of situations. So that parent convinced me that they were coming to help me. And they ended up coming into town from out of town and bringing a whole bunch of people with them, and perpetuated the same exact situation I had been in with these neighborhood individuals. And so my parent ended up trafficking me as well to the Aryan Brotherhood. I was so scared for my life. I felt like I had just, I could not stop doing the drugs, but I also, because I thought they were helping me survive and navigate these circumstances. So it became this really intense time loop, as might be familiar to some of you in different scenarios or similar, who knows. And so I didn't want to stop doing drugs, because if I did, then I would have to ask for help. I would have to tell people what was going on. I had to own up to my part in it. I had to do all of those things that are so scary for those of us in recovery, you know, while working through the steps. I didn't know about the steps at the time. But I knew that all of those things were waiting for me. And a lot of it I felt was my fault. I made a choice to pick up drugs and alcohol and, you know, 10 years prior to that. And I got myself to where I was. Part of me felt undeserving of receiving help. I did not feel worthy of living through this. And it was getting to the point where I was being threatened on a daily basis, and having to flee environments from being killed. And because I kept running and they kept getting very annoyed, and they were pretty much really close to putting me in a remote location where I wouldn't be able to be living my life out on this, like living my life that I had prior to this happening. Cause they were allowing me to live this double life, so there would be no red flags for so long. And it became too much for them to constantly keep track of where I was running off to, and if I was going to run to the police or do whatever, I needed to do to protect myself. So I had been tossed around from trap house to trap house, after I lost my residences and lost everything, except for my car, which I'm so grateful, because my car saved my life. And the people who saw that I was struggling around me saved me by helping me get into another car after mine had been stolen. And so I was in my final trap house, and I had pretty much resigned to the fact that I was going to die that way. I knew that I had so much promise for my future, but I pretty much assumed that I had flushed it down the toilet and didn't have any chance of regaining any of that ever again. So I became really dissociated. I still did not succumb to their offers of me being a paid working girl. That is a means of survival for a lot of us out there. And I'm just stubborn as hell. And I was like, you can kill me first. How about that? Like, no, I'm not able to do that. And so one night, the last night I was in the trap house, I was, told to go get my belongings from this other location that I had just been moved from, and told that I lived here now. And I was like, cool, I'll go do that. And I got in my car and I darted again. And I drove for 8 hours straight through the middle of the night, all strung out, and was followed by gang members that were aiming guns out of their cars at me, had cages in the back, in the beds of trucks, were following me to catch up to me, basically waiting for me to run out of gas or get too scared and be removed from the situation. I drove until the sun came up. I finally showed up at my mom's doorstep and was like, I need help. I can't stop this on my own. I need help. And she knew I was deep in addiction, and they had already cut me off a long time ago. I wasn't allowed at their house. I wasn't allowed in their space, but they barely even believed that I was ready to try to get sober at that point. So I ended up getting detoxed and flushed out in the hospital. They took me to a mental health facility to clear out some mental stuff for a couple of weeks. I was so traumatized, still am, but back then I could not even look at anyone. I was so scared for my life still. And I could barely function. I couldn't do anything. At that point, I went straight from there to an inpatient treatment center for a month. And that was the beginning of my life. That was, AA has given me the opportunity to have the biggest redo of my life. Like I said, I thought I had rid myself of any opportunity or chance to regain back what I knew I was worth, regain back what I knew I could accomplish. I thought all of it had, I had blown my only chance. And recovery has shown me that that is not the case. Recovery is literally the best thing that's ever happened to me. So I spent 30 days in there, and I think I'm the only one who showed up smiling with my one suitcase full of belongings that I had left. Like, I'm here. I'm safe. I can sleep. Finally, I can get back on track. I can do this, you know? I went into it head first. I don't do anything halfway. I dove in head first. And I committed myself solely to recovery. Most of the girls I was staying with in the dorms, they were like, oh, the boys, oh, this. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm busy inside working on my stuff. Like, I don't want to be around anybody. And I spent that entire 30 days that way. And then I went into a sober living for 6 months. I met one of these beauties here. Hello, Miss Elizabeth. I met her at Sober Living, and you know, she probably has told some of you, I was a mess. I was a train wreck, and I didn't like to talk to anybody. I was known as the capital B word of the house. I was like, no, don't talk to me. I don't want to go out with you. I don't want to hang out. I just leave me alone. I'm in my lane. I'm going to work. I'm coming back to the sober house and minding my business. So I'm like, just let me be. I was so agoraphobic and so traumatized. Like, I didn't know who I could trust. I didn't know if anyone could be trusted. I didn't know if I could trust my own instincts anymore. Everything was scrambled. And it's such a terrifying time. To like, early sobriety is terrifying. It was almost scarier than running from traffickers, because I knew what that looked like. I knew what was going to happen next. I knew what I had to avoid. I knew what my up and down cycle of meth use was going to look like. I knew what those things were, but I did not know what was in store for me in recovery. I did not know who I could trust to be around me. I did not know how to trust myself. So after I started the steps, I was able to look at in real time where my actual responsibilities were in my own recovery. I was the kind of martyr type that I wasn't avoiding all responsibility, but I was like, everything is my fault. It's all me. Oh, this elaborate ego of I control the world, and it's because of me and my amazing stuff that I just took a wrong turn. Oh no. And I was in this whole like whole crazy headspace. And my first sponsor was like, what if I told you that like literally this much of this is about you? And I was like, how dare you take that from me? Because now I can justify all of my BS actions, you know? And so I just was like astounded that she was not going to let me take all of that on And it's so funny thinking back about it because I'm like, that's so Siobhan. I'm like, it must be me, the drama, right? So, however, I was able to separate what was me and what was not me. Regardless, acceptance and forward motion was the only answer. When someone told me acceptance, I was like, absolutely not. And I keep telling my story. Oh, my dad trafficked me. Oh, these horrible people. Oh, the mess. Just like the drama around it. And they were like, okay, yes, facts. Totally. Are you ready to go? Are you ready to move on? I love AA and I resent it sometimes because we tell these stories not for us. We tell these stories for others, and that is why I'm here. But I was in the habit of telling my story to myself too much and so much that I could only identify with that story and not who I am or where I'm going. I can't go forward if I'm still living back there and I don't even live there anymore. I'm not much of a big book thumper, but one line I do love in it is from Acceptance Was the Answer on page 419. And I had to underline it and highlight it. Like, look at my ridiculous obsessive compulsive disorder. But I love my mental illnesses. I have them on display all the time. But it says, when I focus on what's good today, I have a good day. And when I focus on what's bad, I have a bad day. If I focus on a problem, the problem increases. If I focus on the answer increases. It is so simple, yet so annoying and difficult to do, especially when I was living way back there. Although I'm coming up on 5 years away from that stuff, sometimes I feel like it's yesterday and my complex PTSD wants to trick me into believing that I am reliving these things, you know, neurological disorders, and these things are absolutely real. But if I can accept that not only am I a survivor just as a whole, but I am a survivor doing one of the hardest things that most of the world won't ever do, and that's doing it sober. Doing it sober, I would never say that it was easy. Ever. I just had a 2-hour therapy appointment right before this. I'm still not fine, but I'm better than I was. And I'll take that any day. I have worked the steps 3 times. And now I'm part of a social service organization where I get to help other youth, at-risk youth and trafficking survivors find these resources, get connected to recovery, get to do these things that some people would never know to even do. And they're getting to find their strength through the fact that, like, it can be done. It can be done. And I don't like to share my story often, and here's why. Because it's so dramatic. It is so drama. It is like a whole ass Netflix series. And I get that. And there may be more traumatic things in your worlds or less traumatic things in your worlds that can seem like barriers. However, trauma is trauma, and I don't negate that for anyone. What's traumatic to you is very, very, very much real. If I could make any suggestion, I would stay hardcore in your program, but also seek other healing modalities that resonate with you. There are a few things that I know that I could not do without in my recovery. And that's therapy. Absolutely. But staying in touch with my sponsor, super important. Am I great at it? Hell no. I'm terrified of talking on the phone. It's awful. But do I still do it? Yes. Working my steps, making sure I'm really checking myself. And you'll know, like, when you get far enough along, when those highs and lows start to level out a little bit, and you just start to feel that bleh inside of you, you're like, oh, I probably should 10 step some stuff, shouldn't I? I need to write some stuff down. I need to call a friend. I need to talk to my sponsor. And those things are there for us. Those are such an amazing toolbox to be able to have access to. Like the job I have now, I took the biggest shot in the dark applying for this job. First of all, I had a full mental breakdown last November and I was like, I gotta quit my job. I've never done that in my entire life. And I did that. I did that. I didn't even quit my job while I was being trafficked, but I like had a full meltdown in full blown sobriety. I'm like, and I was like, I gotta go. And I like something inside of me was just like, this is contributing too much ick to my world. And I don't need this in my life. And I'm not going to show up as my best self if I continue to live this way. So I quit my job and I applied for this job that is like way above my qualifications. Like, are you kidding me? Like, they're asking for a master's in social work. And I'm like, I know a little bit about human trafficking. And I went for it and they gave it to me. And I was like, someone made a mistake. Because I was mostly doing this for like to see that I could, right? But then I looked back at my life and I'm like, man, if you had told me almost 5 years ago or 5 years ago today, are you kidding me? 5 years ago today, my future self came to me and was like, you're going to be married, a stepmom, and have a career that you're really passionate about, and you're going to be safe and healthy in your own home for the first time in 10 years. I would fully laugh and say, no way. No way. You've got the wrong person. But nine-step promises are real, y'all. They're real, and they are not easy to obtain, but once you have put the work in and you're on that maintenance plan and you're just cruising on that maintenance plan, it is, life doesn't get any easier, but it sure is much better to navigate in sobriety, at least in my opinion. From my experience, it is so much better than anything else in my world. I am more stable and more focused and more authentic and more in myself than I've ever been in my life. And looking at the ugly parts is part of that. Not beating yourself up over it, because it's all in the book. It's all in the book. Like, it's all there. Beating yourself up is not going to help anything. But being authentic and honest and true and fully motivated and committed to doing what is necessary to have the best life that there is for you. You may not want any of the things that I want or have. That's fine. You don't have to. These are things I've always wanted but never thought that I would be able to do. And I put these barriers on top of myself by becoming a lesser version of myself. I wanted to make myself small so I didn't have to be accountable or responsible for those things. And it's really hard to do. But now when you step in and you right size yourself and you right size the situations around you and you right size your perspective on the world and your perspective on yourself through this program, those things are possible. So I definitely would suggest fully committing to it if you have, if you're in the space to. You know, it's funny, as I'm at this alumni meeting, but to make things realistic for you, I was at Austin Recovery for 10 days in 2016 on my first attempt. And I was in the IOP and I was like, I'm healed. Spent a little time in the nut house and I am cured. I'm fine. I don't need to do drugs anymore. This is great. You know, I was like on my soapbox in a trap house because I was still living at the trap house. Like, I don't need drugs anymore. I don't know if anyone else has ever done that before, but it's one of my favorite things that people in one of their relapse rounds do because it's so relatable to me. Yeah, I don't need that anymore. I'm fine. Less than 10 days later, I hit my actual bottom and then I got true help. So Austin Recovery was amazing because it was that stepping stone. It was the first time I'd ever seen the steps. It was the first time I ever knew that there were places like this that could help people like me. It was the first time that I had the ability to see this tangible thing. And there is when I saw Miss Taylor tell her story. And I was like, this woman, oh my gosh, she gets it. And I was absolutely beside myself that these types of things, I wasn't alone. I wasn't alone. And that was the first step for me to being able to get to the first step. It's just being somewhere that I didn't even really think I needed to be, but thinking I had it all sorted out and that I was cured and, you know, nothing could go wrong and I'm going to white knuckle my way through this and get my life back or even just try to survive. But no, it was just having the seed planted. And if that's where you are today, having the seed planted. Oh, look at that sweet angelic face. Oh my goodness. I got distracted. I'm sorry. Look at that baby. If this is just, if you're in the space where you're getting the seed planted, that is just as valuable as following through. But I hope for you, all the sweet angels coming in. I hope for them too. I hope for them too. I never would have a relationship with my stepdaughter, who's my little broke best friend. And she's the best thing that ever happened to me, you know, and recovery has just gifted me a life, not only one that I never imagined I could have, but beyond my wildest dreams of where I ever thought I could be. Even before addiction, I was dreaming so small. I was dreaming so small. And my wish for you is that you right size your dreams too, because they deserve to be bigger than you can imagine. And, I know that we got started a little late, but I didn't want to go too far over. Do I have more time, Chris? I'm not sure. Okay. Well, you guys, I guess I'd just say that, like, you know, all the doom and gloom and all the gory details aren't necessary. And I would love for you to have the opportunity to leave history where it belongs. I would love for you to have that opportunity to be accountable for what needs to get cleaned up and go through it. It's not all going to be fixed in a New York minute. It's not. I'm still working on financial amends and stuff like that. I mean, it's a lifelong process. It's a commitment. It's not a genie. But I hope that for you. And I'm just really grateful to have been here today and for allowing me to share my story with you. I hope that was kind of cohesive. I haven't shared my story in quite some time, but thank you so much again for having me.